Boker Tov, welcome back. I hope you had a terrific and wonderful Yom Tov. We're in kind of an interesting period now. The day or two after Yom Tov, everybody's just kind of like reorienting to life. For some people, it's, you know, coming back from a trip and you get to the airport and the person at the check-in says, "You're overweight," and you say, "Yes, I know, I know." And then for some, it's like, you know, the calories you burned from running back and forth to the supermarket 4,000 times, the cart, you wake up in the morning, you just start walking out of the room like this, you know. You make your way into the kitchen, you go this way, and then you go back to the dining room. So one of the nice things about starting right away is the opportunity to kind of settle in as we orient ourselves to thinking about our Torah lives, which was really the purpose of the whole observance of Pesach in the first place, is to reorient ourselves, because we know we're kind of created on two different planes, and that's something that we can think about this morning. We were created, Hayom Haras Olam, we are told, happened in Tishrei, on Rosh Hashanah. But on the other hand, even though we were created, according to the accepted view, we were created in Tishrei on Rosh Hashanah, but there is this whole other side, there's this whole other opinion the Gemara records in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that says, no, we were created in Nisan. So that's a little bit of a peculiar argument. It's between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, whether we were created in Tishrei in the fall or we were created in the spring. And there are a lot of creation metaphors in the Pesach experience for those who think about the idea of the gestation of the Jewish people. You could even think about water breaking after a period of time and then birthing process. There's a lot of creation motifs that appear in Pesach. So you could look at it as these are simply at odds with each other, or you could say really there are two different dimensions to it, to the creation of the Jewish people and us as individuals. And there is the practical, the physical, where the Ribbono Shel Olam took earth and then he fashioned it into something. And then there is the other dimension, which is the spiritual or national. There are different ways of looking at it. Now we are coming off of the holiday of Pesach, where you can say we were, in a certain sense, we are spiritually born. You know, if the natural world, if the natural order of events follows the calendar that began in Tishrei, the supernatural, the above nature, is beginning now in Nisan. So that is a background for the point that we're going to make today, which is here on side one, on line 25, where we are still in Rav Volbi's Alei Shur in the fifth chapter in Mavo Katzar LeMitzvos, in the brief introduction to Mitzvos, where he makes one point. Ve'in hisgalus ha'inyan ha'eloki shehi madregos klal Yisrael nevuah v'nitz ela al yedei ha'mitzvos. So let's focus on this sentence and try to understand it a little bit. It doesn't happen. The hisgalus, the expression and the manifestation of this phrase that is in, you see it's in quote marks, which is the level of the Jewish people, of Klal Yisrael, of prophecy and of miracles, only al yedei mitzvos. So we'll come back to mitzvos in a second, but let's talk about this first phrase of inyan ha'eloki. This phrase, inyan ha'eloki, how would you literally translate it? Right. The topic, the aspect, the issue of godliness, which he says is the madrega, that's the level of the Jewish people, that's the accomplishment that we get to. Without mitzvahs, it's impossible. That's the accomplishment that we get to at our high level. So this is a very interesting and mystical and mysterious phrase. You know, uses this phrase a lot, this concept a lot. Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk. It's a very important concept. For some of you who are familiar, Rav Kook wrote a series of works. Some of them were later edited by his student, the Nazir. called Orot, lights. Rav Kook was a revolutionary rabbinic figure who, he died in 1935 in Yerushalayim. He was the chief rabbi of, he was a rabbi in Europe in several small towns in Boisk and a few other places. And then he came in 1904, he came to Yafo. And then after World War I, he was stuck in Europe. He was the rabbi of a small congregation in London. And then after 1919, he came back. He came to Yerushalayim. He established the Central Rabbinic Yeshiva of Yeshiva Merkazit Olamit, Merkaz Harav, as well as the chief rabbinate as we know it today, the Rav HaRashi Yisrael. He was the first Ashkenazi chief rabbi. He dies in 1935. So Rav Kook was a very unusual personality, and he was a giant in various areas of Torah. He wrote several responsa. Many people asked him halachic questions, 4 volumes. He also wrote lots of interesting monographs. He wrote on Kabbalah, mysticism, poetry, everything. You name it, he wrote it. So one of his works is called Orot, and then there are Orot HaKodesh. But the idea of lights really, that captures the essence, I think, of what he was trying to convey. That is that there is a spiritual light, and this idea of Ha'inyan Ha'eloki finds its way. I'm not an expert in Rav Kook's writings. I don't understand most of the writings that he has. They're very, very esoteric and deep teachings. But the few crumbs that I start to understand, this idea keeps popping up over and over and over again. And he keeps emphasizing this concept, that there is an inyan ha'eloki, there is a godly dimension to the world. You know, we think, he talks about it in this way in one place. We think, I don't know, how many of you are interested in history? Anybody? A few nods? Maybe? So when we look through history, for those who are interested in that, you see an interesting arc of development where you see the development in various cultures over periods of time, especially when you look at it over a long period of time. American history is not so long, but even in American history, you see how certain events unfold and they lead from one to the next. Let's say in Jewish history, you can talk about macro trends. You can say, okay, Jews of Western Europe, let's say they're living in France, the Rhine Valley in Germany. So by the 14th century, they're being kicked out of France, they have to migrate, so they're leaving and moving eastward, and many of them are settling over the next century or two in Poland, the Vada Arbaratzos, and Lithuania, and Ukraine. So you can look at that now in hindsight and say, wow, look at the development of Ashkenazic Jewry. They started in Western Europe, they migrated to Eastern Europe, then the Holocaust comes, it's only about 700 years, but give or take a few centuries, you can look at it as a trend. And you can say, wow, how did that come about? Where did that start? Well, it started because some of the Jews from France, or certainly from Germany, they were originally Italian families, like the Colonimus family. If you look in the Machzor, one of our favorite things in Judaism are piyutim, right? Those are the best. Everybody loves those today. If you want to ever kill somebody with Judaism, drop a book of piyutim on their foot. That'll be the end of them. But many of these piyutim came from a family, a very important Italian-Jewish family called the Colonimus family. We have them because they became German and French piyutim. This family migrated from Italy north to Germany. It's a natural thing to do. And then, ultimately, that family sowed the seeds of Jewish Ashkenazic practice. And you go to any Ashkenazi shul, if you look in the Machzorim, in the tiny letters of what the author's name of the piyut, what's his name? Oftentimes it's Colonimus, because it came from this Colonimus family. And then, when the French kicked us out, and the Germans persecuted us with the Rindfleisch massacres, and blah, 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 so we ended up in Poland, and then we kind of developed in a new way, and then things. So that's one way of looking at history, and it's 100% true. It's absolutely true. But Rav Kook argues, he says, wait a second, there is another dimension to the Jewish story. There is the Inyan HaEloki. There is the godly hand guiding Jewish history. So could I explain why it is that the development of the Jewish people had to take this path? I can't explain it because I'm not adequately versed or or open to the Inyan HaElokei. But Rav Kook says you have to understand that there's another totally parallel, independent path. That is that Hashem is guiding the history of the Jewish people. It looks on the outside that it's going to be the Rindfleisch massacres that precipitate this change. But on the inside, there's something else that's moving everything forward. It also exists, Rav Kook writes in a letter, it exists even in the realm of scientific discovery. You know, we think that Louis Pasteur came up with the idea of, X invention. So now we're going to pasteurize all of our things, and we figured out that the world is round and it's not flat. Rav Kook writes in a letter, he says, no. Hashem revealed those things to the world in a particular time, in a particular way, so that it fit with the divine plan of everything else that was evolving. Not only that, he points out, he says that if in antiquity they had known about certain scientific discoveries that we know about now, they would have been very confused. If they would have known that the world was round, they wouldn't have actually been able to cope with that understanding. It was easier for them to understand that the world is flat, and only over time, as scientific discoveries become apparent, then we can understand that the world is round. But the point is that he's talking about these big macro developments. He's talking about them from two perspectives. The perspective of the outside, the chitzon, and then he's talking about them on the inside. So that whole language for us in America, for many of us, it's very foreign to talk about the Inyan HaElokei, because it's not something that you can measure, it's not something you can kind of grasp easily. So a lot of Rav Kook's themes are very esoteric. They're very ethereal. So the challenge for us sometimes is not just to understand the language of Rav Kook, but to be able to take these concepts that Hashem is guiding the world and that there is this ore, this light. Well, how does it make its way into our lives? That's a challenging thing to do. And it's a little bit of a dangerous thing to do. I'll give you a mashal. There's a story. To appreciate this person is a difficult thing. His name was Rav Menachem Mendel Morgenstern of Kotsk, the Kotzke Rebbe. The Kotzke Rebbe was an extremely profound and deep Hasidic master who, for about 19 years of his life, secluded himself in his room away from his Hasidim. 19 years. So there is a story as to why the Kotzker secluded himself. The story goes that he used to listen to Kriyas HaTorah through the keyhole in the door. He wouldn't come out. It's very interesting. So there is a story that they tell that there was a magical, spectacular antelope that lived in the forest. And one day there was a simple Jew who was walking in the forest and he saw this magical antelope, this incredible reindeer that had these indescribably magical horns. You can imagine a reindeer with gigantic, enormous horns, and the crown of these horns reached up to the heavens. So this Jew comes from a shtetl, where in the shtetl they have a small shul. You know, the greatest thing in the shul, for those who ever went as young people, it's not so common anymore. But if you went to a shtiebel in your youth and you met an old European Jew, sometimes you know what they would have in their pocket. In shul, they would all have a snuff box, a shmektabek. They would have a small amount, a little box with tobacco. And they would go around, everybody take a look. That was the geschmack that you would have in Europe. That was as good as it was getting. My grandfather, Zichron Levracha, in his shtetl, before you died, they would try to get you an orange to smell. So you would have, you could smell an orange. No one could afford to eat an orange, but at least by the end of your life, you should be able to smell one orange. So the great geschmack, the great thing that you had a whole week was to have a shmektabek in shul. So everybody had a little snuff box. So this little Jew comes over to this magical antelope and he says, "Holy magical antelope, you have the most remarkable horns. Could I ask you a favor? I have a pocket knife. Can I just shave off one piece of your antler and I'll fashion it into a box for tabak and I'll take it to shul on Shabbos and people will be wowed." So, of course, the holy antelope says, no problem, great. So he leans his neck down, and this beautiful crown of antlers bends over, and the little yid takes out a pocket knife, and he cuts off the end. Comes to Shul Shabbos morning, and everybody is astounded. They never saw a box of tabak that looked like this. They're amazed. So one of the guys after Shul comes over to him and says, Yaakov, can you tell me, where did you get that? He said, you know, in the forest I met this magical antelope that had horns that went all the way up to the heavens, and they sparkled like I never saw anything in my life. So I asked him if I could have a piece. So he says, really, that's amazing. I got to go find this for myself. So he goes out to the forest, and he asks the antelope for the same thing. And of course, fast forward, what's the end of the story? By the end of the story, one day, the antelope looks up and he notices there's no more horns left. There's no more antlers. They don't reach the heavens anymore. So that's the story that they say as to why the Kotzker went into hiding. That's the story. And you can play out the message of that story. But the reason I bring up that story is because I think there's almost an element of that we have to be careful about when we talk about this phrase, Inyan HaElokei. It's such a grand and mysterious and elevated concept that we have to be careful not to take this elevated grand concept and make it into a box that we could hold our tobacco. Because when we do that, we do a disservice to this. It's almost better, in a certain sense, to leave it the way that it is and to appreciate the beauty and the majesty and the mystery of it from afar than to cut it down to our size. So that's my cautionary note. Now that we did that, let's do that. So we can give the following mashal to explain this, which has to do with how do we define ourselves. We gave the explanation before, Rav Kook's idea of the grand historical narrative, of the two ways of looking at historical trends. But the truth is that the Inyan HaElokei exists on a personal level as well. Each one of us exists in two dimensions, in two planes. We have the physical creation that occurred on, I guess you could say, on Rosh Hashanah, the model that we started with. But then we have the spiritual dimension, that Inyan HaElokei. And that's what we are really striving to cultivate in our lives. And it's a challenge, but ultimately that's the ideal that we want to keep on our mattering map. Turn the page over, go to line 13. Says Rav Volbi, Ha'inyan HaElokei, and how does he define it here or ascribe characters to it? What is it? Line 13. Madregos HaTorah, the levels of Torah, betaras haguf, with the purity of the physical, v'hamachshava, and the spirit, ba'aliyah masmida, with continuous, matmid, continuous aliyah, elevation, lemidos tovos, for refined character, v'tzachus hasechel, and purity of the intellect, Lakol ze zochim ach verak al yedei kiyum hamitzvos bishleimusam. To this, to all of this, we merit exclusively through the fulfillment of mitzvos in their wholeness. So first he defines for us, or he gives us some aspects of what Inyan HaElokei looks like on a personal level, and then he reminds us we're going to get to that through mitzvos. So what does it look like? It looks like taras haguf v'hamachshava. What an amazing concept that a person would really be able to, and it's possible, it's not impossible, everybody on their own level, it's telling us we can all do this. Taras haguf, purifying, refining our guf and our machshava, and our thought. What motivates us? Right, a lot of times we make decisions. Sometimes they're conscious decisions, sometimes they're not conscious decisions. But when we reflect on them, you know what we can do? We can actually ask, well, how did I handle that situation? And we can reflect on that question. But we can ask a deeper question, which is, what motivated me to do that? Meaning, let's say I sent an email to someone, a family member, or somebody in my social circle, or somebody at work. I sent an email, and then I can reflect on the email and say, you know what, I don't know if that email was the right strategy to accomplish what I wanted to accomplish. But there's a deeper way of looking at it, which is to say, why did I send that email? What was it that was driving me? What was behind the motivation? And get to that. So the true high level of Inyana Eloki says that the motivation, that which is driving the behaviors that we do, is driven by this divine spirit. How do we define ourselves? You know, what are the core concepts? What's in the center of our world that's going to drive our decision-making? And that decision-making is going to be manifest in Taras Haguf, the purification, the purity of the physical and the Machshava. Because it's coming from that place. The Aliyah Masmida. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, that's something that we're going to attain easily in a year or two. It's certainly something that I struggle with. You know, some people, they come off of Pesach and they're like, ah, it was a great Pesach. I had such an amazing Aliyah. And some people, sometimes, people come off Pesach and they're like, oh, that was a disaster. It was a total disaster. It's not because they ate too much chametz. It's because they screamed at this one, they got upset at that one. And it's just like, you know, you come to the Seder and you see there are four children, the Arba Banim, there's the Chacham, the Rasha, the Tam, the She'enu, the Elishol. It's not that there are four other children. Sfasema says, we have all four children. So sometimes we come to the end of the day, we say, ah, you know, today I was really a Chacham. And then sometimes we come to the end of the day and we say, Taka, I was the Rasha today. You know, we go through stages. So we shouldn't despair that we're not yet at the Aliyah Masmida. But what he's talking about is that a person who is really, and halavai, we should get there one day, who is really in the Inyana Eloki, they're in the idea that what frames their world is the spiritual, the connection to Hashem Yisbarach. If Hashem is in the center of the world all the time, then they're always Ba'aliyah Masmida. They're always growing. They're always going higher. And in every circumstance, that becomes an opportunity for growing higher, going closer and closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tzachus HaSeichel. Refining our thought, refining our motivations. If it comes from Hashem Yisbarach, on a personal level, what is important to me? Right? So we can make a cheshbon. All the different things that are important to me, those are going to be based on what our internal motivation is. And so says Rav Volbe, you know where you can get through, where you can get that? You get that ach v'rak al yedei kiyam ha-mitzvos b'shlimuson. So how? How does the mechanical fulfillment of mitzvos affect how we are motivated? Right? Not just how we act, but what drives us, the inyan eloki, getting to what defines our life. Well, first of all, the answer is habituation. That when we do something repetitively, it starts to drill down into us. It becomes a part of who we are. And by the way, that's true even if we don't necessarily understand what we're doing or even why we're doing it. It becomes part and parcel of ourselves. That's number one. But number two, he doesn't say doing mitzvahs just by rote. He says doing mitzvahs b'shleimusam. So now we go back and we say, wait a second, what were mitzvahs? So if we understand that mitzvahs are this break in our day that gives us that provide us the opportunity to take a break from the physical world and tap into godliness, it's the tzavs, it's the connection to Hashem. Well, if we constantly interrupt our lives going back to Hashem and keep going back to it and back to it and back to it, eventually we're going to realize we're coming back to that because that's our kavana. It's not just kavana for when we do the mitzvah. You know, if a person takes a day to reflect on what are the important things in their life and they keep reflecting and reflecting, well, ultimately that's going to have an effect on them. You know when we do that? Every Shabbos. That's the point of Shabbos. The point of Shabbos is a day to reflect and say, what are my values? What are the things that are important to me? Where is Hashem in my life? What if you took 1 week where we got everything stripped down, away from all the distractions? We don't even busy ourselves with chametz. You just take 1 whole week to think about what really matters to us. So when we keep coming back to that, those mitzvahs b'shleimusam, they're going to bring us back to the Inyana Eloki. So what he's saying is that, yes, Inyana Eloki is important. That's the definition of our lives. But it's so abstract. You go tell somebody Inyan Eloki, godliness in your life. They say Shkoyach. Okay, thank you. That's such a, it's such an abstract concept. So Rav Volbi says, great. That's why we have mitzvos. The mitzvos that we do remind us and bring us closer and tap us in, not to something outside of ourselves, but the true inner self, the true motivation, which is the Inyan HaElokei. And the more that we develop this, we can see it in different aspects of our life. So it's going to play out on a practical level. You know, the things that we do are going to be manifestations of the godliness that is within us. But really, it's much deeper. It's a deeper idea. It's a refined character of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this Inyan HaElokei, which we can get closer to through the fulfillment of mitzvahs. Welcome back, and I hope you have a great week. Thanks for coming.